Passion, drive, and patience. That's the formula for winning championships and is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. They have superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and much, much more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, they've got it all. eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber and not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Let's keep your ride or die alive today at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. And I know I've talked about this before, but I really, 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 really am pleading with NASCAR, who I guarantee you is listening to this.
The following is a production of Dirty Mo Media.
Hey guys, welcome to Actions Detrimental. I'm Denny Hamlin, driver the number 11 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing and co-owner of 2311 for Bubba Wallace and Tyler Reddick. And my co-host is...
Jared Allen, purple vest guy, photographer, videographer, social media for Denny Hamlin. And shout out to everybody out there for not yelling my name this afternoon. We had a little...
I got to pay up.
We had a little bet.
We did. Oh, airplane or helicopter traveler. I mean,
well, that's not
you
new.
Just go to the you go to the racing style now. I know. Yeah. So I had a bet with Jared that from the bus lot to the car, somebody would call out Jared's name. So the fact that they didn't was pretty surprising to me. Obviously, people that listen to this, or they listen more than they watch this, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Because your face is very memorable. I mean, like, you don't have a forgetful face. I think you have a very distinct look.
Okay. I don't know how to take that.
It's a compliment. It's not a dig at all. It's a compliment. But yeah, so I lost $100 thanks to the Martinsville fans out there. I mean, I hear probably, gosh, what do you think? I mean, you hear the people. Do they talk about the podcast more than go get them today?
I think so.
Now?
You hear that a lot now. Hey, love your podcasts.
Yeah. That's good. I mean, that's good. People are listening. Hopefully you continue to listen. Hopefully I can continue to give you some insight.
Still plenty of booze, though.
Yeah. It's just Martinsville, you know. It's scene of the crime from 2017. Yeah, we had some racing this weekend. Well, before this weekend, speaking of purple vests, you guys had your biannual.
Yep. So we have amongst our purple vests, there's probably close to 40 of us. Last year we started this before Martinsville, since that's the race that everyone's kind of around and no one has to do any major travel for. We went out to GoPro and got as many people as we could together and did a race amongst us purple vest guys. That was last year we did that. There were 16, and this year it grew to 28. And I know we were still missing a handful of people. But I know that's something these guys listen to this, the guys and girls listen to this podcast, and you've kind of created a camaraderie, or at least added to the camaraderie of calling everybody purple vests.
Oh, now
everyone's very proud.
I saw it was part of the trophy as well.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is so cool. And you finished P7.
I didn't wreck anybody. Everyone thought that I was the weapon going into this race. I didn't wreck anybody. Danny Safer of JGR won the race. So the race goes home.
I saw a hella wreck. You show me some GoPro footage of a massive crash in turn one. Is everybody okay?
Yeah, it gets hairy in the back, as you know. Yeah.
So I also heard during qualifying that the slowest individual during qualifying happened to spin out, and when she made her way back onto the racetrack, she cut about half the course off. So her lap time was significantly faster than everyone else's. So everyone knew it, but y'all just like, let her start on the pole.
Yeah, yeah. Hannah of Storehouse Racing. I think that's what happened. Her transponder may not have worked, but I think she spun out somewhere on the track and cut the course. Anyway, she had a 48-second lap, track record, fastest lap on the track of all time. So we were like, yeah, fuck it. You're on the pole, Hannah.
Wow. How long did she keep the lead? About 20 feet?
I think I passed her going into turn two.
Oh, wow.
So She did not finish last, though. That's kind of interesting that you can start on the pole. I don't know if her lap times were the slowest, but she did not finish last. So she started on the pole and did not drop all the way to the rear.
Sounds like there was a lot of passing. That's encouraging.
Yeah. More passing than today.
Okay. We had some racing this weekend at Martinsville. Start off with the truck series. And, I thought that race was interesting. It was just kind of a in-between race where the rain was coming the entire day. I mean, it was wet, like wet. And then it dried out, and then they decided to put the rain tires on when it got to the final probably 20, 30 minutes of drying. So I think that this is what NASCAR said that they wanted to use these wet weather tires for originally. They said, hey, if we can cut out a half hour, if we can get on track a half hour before we're supposed to, because of weepers or rain or puddles across the track, then we could put these tires on and make use of them. They did. And one thing that stood out for me dramatically was that, wow, these tires actually put on a good race. Like, you saw tons of overtaking. Now just remember that the guys don't have their trucks dialed in for the wet weather tires, which I think were dramatically tighter than what the slicks were. So you're going to have people that hit the setup or miss the setup based off of that. But the biggest thing was just the passing. And with passing, I looked at the lap times, and in 25 laps, they dropped a second and a half of lap time in 25 laps from their fastest lap on lap two to lap 25 whenever they threw the caution, right? So I was like, wow, that's, and you looked at the tires and it was like, wow, that didn't wear, like, it's not bald. Like, it's, you would think that these tires would wear out so quickly because they're so soft that it would just demolish the tires, but they didn't. And they held up good, which tells me it's possible, which is why I tweeted that. So it's possible for us to build a tire that falls off that can create some passing and comers and goers. And then I looked at the lap times. Once they put the slicks on, it was like hardly any fall off at all. So it was just that was something that really kind of stood out to me. I saw Kyle Busch's interview where he was like, they probably should have started the race a little sooner. They probably could have. But, this is NASCAR kind of treading water on, like, let's just tiptoe into this wet weather, deal. And now that they know that how that tire performs, how wet the track was, how dry the track was, I think they're going to be more apt to use it now in damp conditions for sure. If it's going to be a dry racetrack with just a few puddles, we don't need the mud flaps. That's for sure. Because it seems like they were very hesitant to run it when the track was fully wet, which I agree with. I just think that wet weather, ovals, you have walls, you have no place to go when you overshoot a corner. It could make for some massive wrecks. So I think they used it at the right time, personally.
So you were content with calling the race when they did and not going back to the wet weather tires?
Yeah, I was looking at the, because I was tuned in watching on TV, and I was looking on my radar app to see, like, is it going to hang around? I thought that they would have had to wait probably another 45 minutes for it to really clear and be clear for the rest of the evening. Well, there were spotty showers everywhere, but like, I think in 45 minutes they could have regone again, but it was so late in the night. I was indifferent either way, right? I'm going to stay up just because I'm an avid fan, right? But I don't know how many people would stay up at 12:30, 1 o'clock to watch the end if it's past its halfway point.
Yeah, it sounded like, from what I read on Twitter from reporters at the track, that the overall feel of the garage was that they did want to go back to racing on the wet tires, at least to try it.
Yep. Yeah, I think they should have tried it for sure, but you're trying it in the middle of a race that means a lot to the competitors. So,
right. And once you try it, when do you call it, right? Is there a big wreck and you're like, all right, we're done?
Yeah, basically, right? Kind and then we would just be you know, hammer NASCAR by that decision. So I think it's probably the safest play is the one they made for sure. I think the only time maybe you do try it is if it's a practice situation where, hey, if you don't want to go out there, don't go out there. But, you know, at least let a few trucks out there, if it's, or cup cars, if it's, you know, pretty wet, and just see how it works out. But it's good. You know, the Wright truck won anyway. Corey Heim, I think that was the first win for Tricon Garage and David Gilliland. So congrats to them. And yeah, it was I thought it was a good race, very competitive race for sure. Then we had the Xfinity Series. John Hunter Nemechek just was so fast. The Gibbs cars really seemed to be good on the short tracks. Josh Berry was really fast in the long runs, but they just never really got long enough runs, or strategy didn't work out for them for it all to work out. But I thought it was, you know, those races were pretty good. And, you know, we didn't see, you know, just massive, crazy wrecks, you know, show type wrecks that we've seen in those series in the past. So I was pretty happy with what we saw.
And those mud flaps came to play.
Yeah, it made for an epic burnout for John Hunter Nemechek. I was hoping that, you know, once he pulled away from the wall and it was still on fire, he could just keep roasting them and, you know, be like, you know, the DeLorean when it got to 80 miles per hour. But it was great. I think he had a fire protection sponsor. So, man, that was epic. I don't know if he planned on that. If he did,
that's what I want to know.
Because if he planned it, it was awesome.
Big execution. Brain move by John.
Big brain move, no doubt.
All right, so moving into the Cup race today. I don't know, different from the Xfinity and truck races.
Well, you know, I you know what I was going to do? Race morning, I was going to tweet out, don't forget Chase Elliott's return. Tune in to FS1 at 3:00, you know, because my Twitter feed, that's all it keeps feeding me. The algorithm, you know, NASCAR, I don't know what they spent on Chase's comeback as far as advertising, but man, they're ready. They're ready for that comeback. And, you know, which is good. Hey, anytime they're promoting drivers, we're all in for it. Right. But, they certainly could do that more often for sure.
So Harvick was asked in the media center on Saturday, I guess it was yesterday, what he thought about Chase's return. And he said that he does think that plays a significant factor into the TV ratings. Do you think that's the case? I personally don't know if that's true, or I wouldn't guess that that's true.
TBD, right? We'll find out in a couple days, right? Certainly the ratings have been in a slump. For sure. You know, I think the fans in general on social media are really, really tough on Fox. I think some of it is warranted for sure, but I think that they're very critical about some really small things that they could get better. One thing, you know, I saw at Dirt last week, or when I watched it back, was like, you know, the announcers would be talking about some side-by-side battle and the camera wasn't on it, so you didn't know what are they talking about. Let me see this battle, right? And then you see, I did notice too, as soon as like some action would start to heat up on a side-by-side battle, they'd cut to like 12th place, and you know, these guys are battling for, you know, look, you know, you see the second place guy working over the first place guy like right on his ass and about to make a move, and they cut to like side-by-side for 12th, and it's like, oh well, let's keep it in the battle that's about to dictate who's going to be leading this race. So certainly I think from a production standpoint, we could make some improvements. It's so hard. You know, what they're doing is so, so hard when you bring in different third parties into call the race each and every week. It just, that's difficult. I mean, professional announcers and commentators are like, the best ones are so hard to come by, and they make, you know, drivers who go up there and do it part-time, you know, they're just on another level. Like, I've learned a professional at anything is great, right? And I got to do a few with Adam Alexander and Xfinity, and it's just like, wow, he's so good with the calls, and like, he brings the level of excitement when a move is about to be made, and man, those guys, they're really, really good, right? And while it's good to bring old drivers in or, you know, maybe crew chiefs or something in. You know, it just doesn't replace solid talent that you have there every single week and allows them to mesh. They know when to talk. The next person picks up because they know when that other person is about to finish their sentence, and then bam, they're going to pick right up. And so I think that that definitely could help for sure. But, you know, it's a tough job, tough job up there. I've seen some of the behind the scenes production of what it takes to direct a NASCAR race, and they've got all these cameras and they're go to this camera, go to that camera. And, you know, it's difficult when so much stuff's going on.
Yeah. I think from a driver's perspective, Fox is probably looking for that Tony Romo-esque character, right?
Yeah.
Someone who just came from the sport and can really articulate what drivers and crew chiefs are seeing.
Yeah, and certainly I think that there's an element of it, right? It's why is it so compelling to listen to MRN, right? You're not even watching the race, but man, they make it seem like someone is making a massive charge and is side by side and driving into the car. Like, it is so exciting. And I think at times we get very monotone when there's an exciting moment going on that certainly would bring a level of excitement, I think, to a casual race fan that like, oh man, I need to be paying attention. Like, this is big.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I think that Harvick going into Fox next year certainly will hopefully bring in some of that chemistry that those two permanent guys definitely need.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing these ratings, because if they do in fact show that there's a Chase Elliott factor, I think that's good for drivers and helping prove to NASCAR, hey, your drivers are your important pieces, right? You need to promote them more so there's more Chase Elliott factors.
Yeah,
other than
great point,
Chase Elliott.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that's what our series has lacked since the big guys went away, the Tony Stewarts, the Dale Juniors, is that it's the star power, right? And when the most popular driver's not at the racetrack, who has the largest fan base, it'll play some factor. I think that his fans were fans of his dad, or, you know, or just fans of his. Yeah. They're going to watch NASCAR racing probably no matter what. So, but hey, if we're flat or not a double digit loss, I think that we're probably saying that it's a Chase factor for sure.
Yeah, they're legacy fans trying to connect to the modern day drivers, and they do it through the last name.
Yeah, I think Kevin Harvick definitely said it correctly in the media when he said that, you know, he is kind of the last link to the legacy fan for sure.
Yeah, so he finished 10th today and got out of the car and said he had zero pain whatsoever in his leg.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it means that certainly he came back at the right time, finishing top 10. In your first run back, this is probably one of the most physically demanding racetracks on that, except for the road courses. The road courses certainly will be a much bigger challenge to him in that left foot braking than what Martinsville was. But still, you know, very solid showing first time out.
Where do you want to start with today's race and unpacking this?
Well, you know, I think that obviously, you know, the elephant in the room, right, is the type of racing, right? Did we like what we saw? Did we not? You know, when we were kind of gathering before we started hit play on or record for this podcast, our producer Travis is like, you know, I'm pretty new to this and the race seemed fine to me, I guess. Like,
yeah.
So there is always another side of the coin, right? You know, we're going to be the guys, since we've been in the sport for such a long time, to compare it to a different time, right? But we are in a different time now, right? It's, you know, I looked back and I try to be as well educated as I could because I knew this was going to be a topic. You know, I looked at, you know, lap times over the last 10 to 5 years. 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and then now, and to see like, it, is what we're feeling a real thing? The lack of passing, you know, the ability to pass. Is tire fall off not what it used to be? The very short answer is yes, without a doubt. Tire fall off is half of what it used to be. And in a time where you had lap time fall off that was twice as much, and you had cars that were different because they were manufactured and built by the race teams themselves, there was more overtaking because there was more variables, different drivers, different cars. You know, it just all added up to more lap time variation, right? When a car would hit it, you could come back from a speeding penalty, blow through the field, and like you could make it happen. And in the next gen era, it seems as though we talk about more and more execution. You know, I say it with my 11 team all the time, right? It's execution. When you get in the lead, control the race, don't lose it. And if you don't lose it and you just execute a nice, smooth day, you don't make any mistakes, have good restarts, we will find ourselves in a position to win most times. But the short answer is the passing was more difficult, without a doubt. As we saw, whoever got out up front, and this is not just a Martinsville thing. Like at Bristol, whoever took off to lead a stage would lead every lap and win the stage. Ryan Preece went from what we thought was the most dominant car. You put him in the back of the pack, and he was one of the first guys to get lapped on the lead lap. Joe Logano, I battled with him to lap him many times. A few times. The 19 was in the absolute way all race. I mean, he had been 30th, and just he caught the caution. He didn't pit, I guess, and caught the caution and then put himself up in the front. So I'm wondering, were their cars really that bad, or are they just in air, right? So like, it's hard to say which one it is. Like, when you put a good car in the back, does it just become and when you put a car up front, does it just become great? Like, I don't even know, and it's very hard to tell. But certainly it's frustrating, because as drivers, it's taken our skill set out of our hands, right? Like, I know what I need to do if I want to get a little bit more lap time. I know techniques that I can make around that racetrack to either set up passes or gain a little bit of lap time, depending on how long the run's going to be. I can abuse my tires for a certain amount of time, and I know that, and I can use that skill set to make passes. Now it is, you just put me behind someone who's never run the racetrack before, and I won't be able to pass them. It's just that difficult. And so, I looked at a couple of guys' quotes after the race, and I saw it was very familiar. Obviously, the Stuart Haas guys, who were dominant early, put them in the back. They didn't do anything.
Yep.
You know, the 5 car was pretty good. Not stellar, but he was okay. He was pretty good. And then, you know, it worked out to where the front cars, us included, stayed out because we had 30 laps on our tires. And we've only fell back to 4th. It was crazy. I expected to go 5 years ago, I would have finished a lap down. Like, it would have been that big of a detriment to stay out on old tires. But, you know, this is a problem. I really, really wish we could make it a forefront of our testing. I know that we're trying the aero package. At this point, I don't know if it's the aero package or not. I think it's a grip horsepower problem. I'll say that because I remember doing tests about 10 to 12 years ago when we were running 900 horsepower at 950, really. Like, we were up there, and they kept playing around with tapered spacers. Like, all right, we're going to cut the horsepower down at whatever track we were testing at. And I noticed for every 50 horsepower that they took out of the car, because we kept trying these different plates and they kept choking the horsepower down more and more and more, the long run was 0.2 faster every time they started taking horsepower away. So if the fall off was 1.5 seconds at any given racetrack that we were testing at, if they took us out, took 100 horsepower out, the long run was only a second of fall off. So the cars didn't slow down nearly as much because you don't have the horsepower to burn the tires off. So that's been 300 horsepower ago. So it measures up to what we're seeing while we're watching the race, and what we're feeling while we're driving is that I'm running the same damn times, or if not faster than the guy with in brand new tires right behind me. It's just because we don't have the horsepower to get our cars to spin the tires. So we've made a conscious effort to not only take horsepower away, but also take RPM away. And we talked about this as drivers in our with NASCAR just a few weeks ago at Atlanta. And the initiative behind this that has come from NASCAR is that, you know, they're trying to get the engine bills lower. For whatever reason, they want the engine bills to be lower. And that's really hurting competition right now. We've got to identify that it is hurting our on-track product. And is it worth it to try to get $1 million less engine bill? Are you willing to give up, you know, what we're giving up for our on-track product? I just don't think that it's worth it. And by the way, the engine bills have not gone down since we were running 900 horsepower. They're the same. So we just, I don't know where we're going. And I know I've talked about this before, but I really, 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 really am pleading with NASCAR, who I guarantee you is listening to this. You got to give us some horsepower back, or RPM or something, to create the passing like we need to, because it's really, it's a challenge, and it's taken driver skill sets away. And so I don't know the right answer. If they added 100 horsepower overnight, which I don't even know if they could. I listened to Jeff Gluck's podcast, is a great one, by the way, the teardown after the race. And he says that Dustin Long spoke to Jeff Andrews, the Hendrick Motorsports engine, or I believe he's the president there. I could be wrong. But Jeff Andrews, a high-up executive at Hendrick Motorsports, he says, you know, if we press the button of go right now, that next year we're going to have 100 more horsepower. He's like, it's possible. We can do it. But the parts, like, I know that Andy Graves at Toyota said the same thing. Getting the parts that we need to make our engines have more horsepower would take time. Now, again, you could just change the spacer in the car and it takes about 15 minutes and we could have more horsepower. But the engine builders, you know, build the engine around that tapered spacer. So they would, he said we would have to dial it and say it right now. If we wanted more horsepower next year, you would have to make the call right now, because they can't get the parts in 6 to 12 months. Like, that's his timeline of switching to a more horsepower package. But I really wish we would consider it. I know we keep talking about it, and I guarantee you, from the driver's perspective, we will keep talking about this if this is the road that we're going to continue to go down, because we're really hurting our on-track product with this initiative to lower RPMs, lower horsepower. It's not good, in my opinion. And I only speak that because I've been doing this for 18 years, and I've been through lots of generations of cars, lots of generations of engines. And this is by far the toughest that it's not just tough. It's impossible. You can't make the moves that you need to make. There was one pass for the lead today when first and second place were on the same tire strategy. And that was when I passed Chase Briscoe for the lead. Now, it took me 60 to 70 laps on tires for me to actually pass him. But that was the only lead change today where it wasn't a tire advantage, disadvantage, like Larson at the end, right? Well, he was going up against cars with 30, 40 laps on his tire, so it made him look like he was super strong, which maybe he dialed it in that last run, but it's there's got to be, we used to really talk about all the green flag passes that the Cup Series had. I haven't heard anyone say that in the next gen era. Is someone hiding those stats? Because they used to really boast on, we got the most green flag passes we've ever had in history. I ain't heard that in a long, long time. And certainly I'd love to see the green flag passes for the lead stat, because it can't be good.
Well, Priest started the lead right at the start of the race and then also won stage one.
Yeah, I mean, that's without having to stop for pit road, he would let all 400 laps, because it's just that difficult to pass. And so I'm not on my own on this one. I'm looking at the bunch of driver quotes that we're all frustrated with it for sure, but this is just kind of the box and the where we've been sent down. It's down this path, and we're starting to see when you choose things like that, there's always a, for every action, there's a reaction. This is the reaction to taking horsepower out of the cars and now shifting. You know, we have to shift because they've taken RPM out. So if we could run more RPM, we could not shift. That certainly would help passing as well. I'm going to stay on that train as well. So we've got plenty of options. And then, by the way, let's have a tire that falls off, please. We know Goodyear is capable. They are so capable. They're smart. I haven't toured it, but my team has toured it. It's like, wow, they've got enough technology here to make tires better and would really challenge them. And I know Dale Jr. is on this. He's on this train. Like, Goodyear, come on. Like, give us a tire that will really start to fall off. It's possible. I guarantee it's possible. It's just they don't want blowouts. They don't want whatever, right? But if you knew as a driver that you had to save your tire or it would blow out.
I mean, that seems like something you should want, right?
Absolutely. Because
like you want the driver to be afraid that he's going to lose a tire if he pushes it too hard.
Because you, Jared Allen, you might want to go faster early on in the run to get your position. I'm going to hold back and be like, all right, I'm going to get you in the long run. But maybe a caution saves you.
Right.
You've got your track position. Now I'm like, shoot, I shouldn't have waited so long. So maybe the next run, I go push harder. Like, that is part of racing, and it's such an important part of it that we've definitely lost for sure. We can be better. We can do better. I'm confident. This isn't lost. We're going to have to make some real decisions, some big decisions, and we tried this path. It's not helping us. Let's try something different.
To put all that into perspective, do you remember in 2010 you pitted from the lead at Martinsville with like eight laps? Restarted with six laps to go and were able to drive from, I don't know, the sixth row to win the race.
I sure do. Those days are gone. I mean, until we change something, we fundamentally change something, get rid of the shifting, give us a tire that falls off or more horsepower. You've got those three things: shifting, tires, horsepower. Change one of them, like majorly change them. Don't tweak it, change them, and this will get better. And if you change all of them, you'd have the cream would rise to the top. That is for sure. Superstar, you would know who the superstars of this sport are.
At just short tracks or all around?
Well, certainly on short tracks. I think that, you know. I think that Jeff Gluck's poll of his, is it a good race? Flat out, the numbers are down this year, right? I mean, it's just down. People are starting to figure out the next gen car. They definitely are getting more honed in. Everyone's starting to run the same speed. Everyone's got the same equipment nowadays, right? There's just not enough variables between the cars and ingenuity that like teams can have to make your car faster than my car. It's just become an execution race. Qualify well, stay up front, don't make a mistake on pit road, don't screw up your strategy, you will contend for a win.
If you were to change RPMs and the horsepower and whatnot, does that create a car that's more expensive for an individual team? What I'm kind of getting at is, if you change all those three things, you'd still have what NASCAR is looking for, right? Which is an overall more competitive field.
Yes.
But the difference in each car would solely come down to the driver.
It should cost the teams no additional money. Again, because when we had 900 horsepower, the engine bills were the same. We've just taken 300 horsepower out just because. You know, I don't know if it's a limiting factor on a new manufacturer coming in, but I don't see anyone knocking on our door. So
you would get the product you're looking for. It would
I thought that, gosh dang it, who was it but that was sitting behind me at that Atlanta driver's meeting? It's just like, I forget. I want to give him credit, whoever it was, says, make our product good, people will want to come.
Yep.
Make our product good, people will come. Sponsors, manufacturers, whatever, right? There's a lot of barriers to a new manufacturer coming in. Like, it's not, they don't just build an engine or have to develop an engine. They have to develop a simulation. They know they got to, you know, build, these motion simulators that cost a ton of money. Like, there's the barrier is tough for someone new to come in, but it's, the easiest thing is just that little 1-inch plate in the intake, changing that thing out to be a little bit bigger to give us some more horsepower back to, you know, again, just try it, please, one time. And if it doesn't work, then we'll try something different. But I think that shifting, horsepower, tires, one of the three of them has to change in a big way, or else we're going to keep chasing our tail and keep spending money on these aerodynamic tweaks.
Racing with what we have, how were you able, or how did you make that pass on Chase Briscoe for the lead under green flag conditions?
Finally, our pace started slowing up enough to where I could work him over. And, you know, again, when I talked about kind of how my technique is at Martinsville, I have to be patient, very, very patient with waiting until the lap time falls off to a certain number. That way I can then start working a different lane of the racetrack. So I knew that our car was strong when it was Chase, Briscoe, Harvick, and then me. And we pulled away from fourth place by like a mile. And I was able to stay tucked up right near those guys. And I'm like, oh, if I get in front of them, they ain't coming back around me. Because if you can stay that close to the leader when he's in clean air and has that big of an advantage, that means your car is really, really strong. And so I worked over Harvick. I passed him when we had about 40 laps on tires, maybe 50. And then about 20 laps later, I worked over Priest enough to where
Briscoe
to where he was starting to miss the bottom. He was getting loose, and I just kind of used my technique to get off the corner a little bit better than him. And at that point, you know, I'm just trying to lap as many cars as I could. And, you know, that's when me and Bubba got into it. But, you know, I knew that a green flag cycle was about to start. And also I saw Logano, him, and a couple other guys that, you know, would be normal contenders week in, week out, like an opportunity to lap them. I'm pushing. Like, I want to lap all of them because it opens up my box of strategy that I can do with less cars on the lead lap. So I was behind Bubba for a really long time, and I'm getting frustrated, and I'm like, gosh, dang it. I moved up, and then he moved up in front of me. And I just did that for about 3 or 4 laps. I'm like, I got to dive it in here. And when I dove in, he came down, we hit, I knocked him up the track. And then he, for 4 straight laps, had my rear tires off the racetrack. And I told him afterwards, I'm like, listen, if you wanted to hit me, that was fine for like once or twice. But like, eventually you got to get off my ass. You know, I am the leader of the race. And so, it's just a situation where he's fighting because he knows how important it is to stay on the lead lap. And I am fighting to put all these guys a lap down.
How important it is to put them a lap down.
Because, you know, I didn't get it done. And then I think I passed the 22 or lapped him. And then, bam, caution comes out or something like that.
All those guys.
Yeah. And like, I could have had him a lap down where then we wouldn't have had to deal with them later.
Yeah. I think everyone's probably watching that race and be like, man, Bubba's racing you so hard. You're his team owner. He should let you go. But it does put into perspective how you said it earlier, is that those guys' cars aren't necessarily that bad. Right. It's just where they are in traffic, right? So in Bubba and Joey's case, if they can stay on the lead lap where they are and then the caution flies when it does, they pick up all that track position. And I think Joey finished, what, third today? Second?
Yep.
And Bubba, I believe, salvaged the top 10 as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, was their car that bad or were they just in crappy air, right?
Yeah.
It's chicken or the egg. We really don't know. But listen, Larson, this is a big one for him. I know that, he was super pumped on our golf guys chat. Like, he said what he said on social media, unless you did that.
I spoke for him on social media.
Okay. But he said the same thing. He did. He was like, I can't believe it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's where it comes from.
Yeah. So he's gotten so much better. Back when he ran for Ganassi, like Larson, man, he was all over the place and he couldn't hit the same line twice. And he really put a lot of work in to get better at these short tracks. And and he's with an organization that's won, I think this is their 28th win or something at Martinsville. It's a crazy stat. But it's great for them. I thought for sure NASCAR was going to take the 9 and the 5 back to the R&D Center to even the score on those two as well. But all's good there. Looks like they got through tech. They're not going to be facing any scrutiny this week. But, yeah, it was great for them. They're really capitalizing well. That team in general, they're just kind of, I said after the race, like they're tinkering along, like third, fourth, fifth, sixth, all race, and just keeping themselves in it. And eventually, you know, we had a strategy call that didn't work out. Boom, we're out. Harvick got a penalty. Boom, he's out. Next thing you know, well, all right, race is here for ours to take. So, and they've been doing it, and that's been their MO on the race wins that they've had this year. Is they're just out executing everyone.
I think that's one thing that did make this race pretty fascinating, is that with the 100 laps to go, you had those two cautions, one with the 100 and then one with 40 or 50.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, which team who made the right call with 100 to go and the right call with 50 to go?
It was a combination. Yep. Yeah, that's where we lost it with the 11 car. Obviously, I thought that we had a race-winning car again. at least we got a decent finish out of it this time. I was thinking, I was chewing the steering wheel when I was about eighth or ninth there with 30 or 40 to go, because, you know, we had just pitted. We had 9 laps on our tires. And I talked to Gabe Hart afterwards, and he's like, I was going to stay. But then you kind of put a little doubt in my
exactly.
mind.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to wanted to play devil's advocate, because you obviously sounded frustrated on the radio after coming out 9th, right? But before pitting, you'd said something like, so those guys on fresh tires are going to be behind us? Like
right behind me.
Right behind me.
So it's I think that gave him pause.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he even said, like, maybe I thought we were better than what we really were. And it was unbelievable. I mean, I thought, you know, hey, if we come out 5th, I'll be fine. But we didn't. We came out 9th because of the cars that stayed out there. I mean, I was just about to lap the 22. And next thing you know, he's in front of me.
Yeah.
Like 5 laps later. And I was like, what the hell happened? Right? It's just the guys that don't have anything to lose, they go long and they catch a caution. Bam. It changes the whole complexion of the race. But I definitely messed up, I guess, kind of putting that doubt in his mind. I mean, looking back on it, 9 lap tires, like we definitely should have stayed out. I mean, that's just we certainly would have led the race, because the Briscoe, he stayed out on whatever lap tires he had and was pulling away from the field who had tires. And so with 9 laps on our tires, no doubt, as fast as our car was, we were going to at least be pitting from the lead going into the last pit stop instead of 9th. And we just decided to stay out, which was actually a saver for our race for a top 5, because, you know, that was a super aggressive call. I was really worried about it. You know, I had new tires right behind me, right beside me. And with 30 lap tires, we were able to hold them off. I mean, our car was strong and Joey finished 2nd on old tires. So it just, we fumbled it a little bit, partially my fault for sure, for kind of putting that doubt in his mind that I couldn't hold those guys off with 9 lap tires. But dang it, I hate missing out on these, which should be wins. But when you have the problem that we have with passing, like, you have to hit your strategy, you have to hit your pit road, everything's got to be, it's execution. And it's, you know, that's been kind of the Achilles heel of the 11 car for the last few years. My pit crew did great today. No blow up stops. They kept me in the game the whole time. It's just that one caution that, like, it can go either way, either pitting or not, that decides the outcome.
Yeah, my question is, and obviously hindsight's always 20/20, but had you stayed out with 100 laps to go, do you really think that you would have taken 2 tires on the 2nd caution? Because
maybe Harvick, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. And that would have been a choice we would have made, right? But we would, at least the worst we would have been is been where Briscoe was he was on 4 tires. I thought we were better than him. We clearly passed him. And he was pressuring me for 3rd or 4th. Well, 3rd for a while. And if his car was better, or maybe mine was just good enough on the old tires, like, I felt like if I had new tires against a 30 lap guy, I probably would have got around him, I thought. But who knows, right? This is the ifs and whats and buts and all that stuff. It's another one that got away a little bit, but I'm really happy with our start to our white hot run.
Yeah. Did you see NASCAR's
tweet? Yeah. People are so unoriginal. Get your own damn quotes. Like, come on, man. People love using the quotes for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. But he deserves that. He's won 2 out of the last 3. Fine. Larson's white hot.
But you're at least not a lawn chair this week.
Yeah. Screw Chopper. Yeah. He called me out last week. Now, listen, it was deserving on Dirty Modo. If you listen to him, he's like, I don't get it. You know, Hamlin, he runs up front, finished 20th. Take someone out, finished 20th. Bad strategy, finished 20th. Yeah. And he's like, you know, I'm sick of losing money on him. And I'm just like, all right, buddy. Well, bet against me at your own risk.
Well, y'all have some beef from pickleball, right? Carried over?
Yeah. Listen, the guy can't bend over and tie his shoes. Like, he thinks he's going to beat me one-on-one in pickleball. Give me a break.
Did the track change much today when we went from overcast to sun back to overcast?
It did. For whatever reason, my car took off when it was sunny. It was haul in the mail. And the Hendrick guys, I noticed the 48 of Bowman had a crazy fast run early in the race, and then I never saw the guy again. And it was during that time where my car, I was battling with the 6 car with Keselowski. You know, he couldn't hold the bottom, so he kept running into the side of me. And finally, I gave him the business back on the back straightaway and rubbed up against him. And then I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to – he kept running to me in the middle of the corner, so I'm going to nudge him up. And then he carried me all the way down to the pit lane, down the backstretch. But from that point on, like, I drove from 8th to 2nd or 3rd or something like that. My car took off. That's right when the sun came out. And the Hendrick cars dropped an anchor. They were plowing the center of the corner for whatever reason when that happened. So that was a big transition point of the race. But they, you know, they kept themselves in it, the 5 cars especially, and just executed perfectly. The 24 really surprised. He wasn't better than what he was. The 9 car, I guess he finished 10th. I don't know where he ran all day, but really surprised with the 24. He was, if you look at the averages and stuff, he was super fast in practice, but just was very pedestrian, as I like to say.
All in all, the Stuart Haas cars look the class of the field.
Yeah, shout out to Stuart Haas. They had a great showing, and they've not had a whole lot of those. They've struggled for a while, you know, getting all their cars to run fast. But it seems like when they do, like, they all run in the top 10. Like, it's weird that maybe they just hit on a setup or something like that on some oddball weekends. But, like, they're not afraid to run 15th to 28th, you know, for a few weeks. And then all of a sudden they show up at Martinsville and it's like, oh, gosh, they're all, you know, probably the top five fastest cars. So, yeah, they hit on something that was super good for them. And when I was racing around them, they were pretty dialed in.
Yeah, what did can you say what Almirola can you all y'all were talking about after the race?
Yeah, he just said what I talked about for an hour that can't pass. He's like, you know, it's just so frustrating that we thought we were good and then put us in eighth and we were not good. So that was it.
Yeah.
Dear Danny, we've got some questions that we wanna ask. Dear Danny, we need answers and we need them fast. We tried to ask Junior, but his answers were lame. And with DBC, it was more of the same. Now we're caught on you, cause you're our only hope. This ain't the racetrack, so maybe you won't choke.
Moving on to Dear Denny, put out this question on your Instagram. So people listening to the show, always remember you can tweet at Denny or Dirty Mo with hashtag Dear Denny, or just reply to some of those Instagram stories I put up every once in a while. First question is, you once talked about how frustrating it is to watch a teammate have success while you struggle. Has the weekly success of Christopher Bell, the current points leader, early this season frustrated you at all?
No, because I think that we've ran as good as Christopher Bell. We just haven't finished as good as Christopher Bell, but I've been in that position. Absolutely. Where, you know, Kyle Busch, when he first came in, Matt Kenseth, you know, probably in 2013, I've had plenty of years where my, you know, guys in the same equipment as me are outperforming me week in, week out. And absolutely it is frustrating. I mean, it's one thing when your whole organization is running in the teens, and that's kind of, well, you can kind of draw a conclusion that's all of our cars are capable of. But when you've got one that is, you know, out front or capable of winning, and you've got the rest of them in the teens, then yeah, it becomes like, what am I doing wrong? For sure. And I mean, I definitely doubted myself in 2018 when it seems like I could qualify well, but as soon as they dropped the green, I couldn't get to 12th place fast enough. And, you know, things changed in 2019, and we've been as fast, if not faster than anybody from that point on. You know, it's at least got as many wins as anyone at that point. Larson might have one more than me now in this last four-year stretch, but I think it's close.
How does someone start their career in the sport, and not necessarily as a driver, but in the business world of the sport?
I think if you want to be part of a NASCAR team, now is the time. It's the easiest entry point ever in history is right now. I think that certainly, you know, if you're passionate about the sport, I would say go to your local short track and volunteer to be on someone's team at the local short track. So a late model team or whatever team, and just say, what do you need me to do? And continue to work up the ladder. If you look at a lot of the team members or pit crew members, spotters, these are guys that, like, I saw Alex Yontz that was the crew chief for the 10 car in Xfinity. I'm like, really? I raced late models with him. Frank Denny Jr., who's a spotter, like, Drew Herring is a spotter for Truex. Like, I've raced against all these guys. Like, you stay in the sport and you work your way up and you get experience. And I know at 2311, it's, you know, you submit your resume and we'll go through it. And we've been given people with maybe even less experience than what we're comfortable with at times, jobs, because we feel like we can train them and lead them to have the skill set that they can have for the long term. But I would just go and volunteer at a local short track and then take those credentials and apply for then a truck team. It's not going to be your front running truck team. They're not going to take a risk on an unknown guy, but you stay in the sport, you help out. Sometimes you're gonna have to volunteer, and it'll pay off in the long run. I definitely think the entry point's easier to come in and work for a top tier team now than ever.
And that goes for all positions across the board, not just marketing, the office things as well.
Yeah, sure. I think that, you know, kind of the carpet walkers, as I like to call them, the people that don't really go into the race shop, but they do sponsorship and marketing and hospitality and stuff. You don't have to necessarily be in the sport to be have an entry point mm-hmm. for that. But as far as mechanics on a race car, if you want to do it, you can do it. You can come in right now.
Moving on to Talladega this weekend. What's different about, or what are the differences we're going to see this weekend with Talladega than we did with Daytona?
It's a much wider racetrack, but we don't need all that space. We don't need all that space.
Still double file.
I hate being Denny Downer.
That's the segment that follows Dear Denny.
Oh, gosh, dang it.
Denny Downer.
No, I mean, I'm trying to find some positives here, but our super speedway racing isn't what it used to be either. It used to be three wide, four wide. You know, Dale Earnhardt. Okay. I don't know how many times you're going to see the Dale Earnhardt comes from 18th to 1st and 5 laps or whatever it is. They're going to keep playing that damn replay. Well, that's nice because it's not able to be done anymore. So we're going to get in line. There's going to be an inside line. There's going to be an outside line. I'm going to be in one of them, and I'm going to just sit right there.
And cross your fingers.
I put on the handcuffs. You know, the day of building runs, making runs, and it's just, we're just going to sit there and I-77 traffic, and hopefully I pick the right line that goes forward. And what happens is whatever line has the third and fourth place guy willing to push more, that line usually prevails. And so I will jump lines when I feel like I can be a lower number in whatever lane that I'm in. So that will be my strategy. It's just kind of get in line and ride around. And hopefully we miss the carnage from a push gone bad or a block gone bad up front.
So important to qualify well.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of other factors, right? The manufacturer's going to get together.
Yeah.
Green flag pit stops. You're able to cycle your way to the front through things like that, executing well on and off pit road. Good fast pit stop, maybe taking no tires, but it's going to be all track position. I mean, no question about it. Whoever's up front in the top eight, you better be in the top eight with 30, 40 to go, or else you're not going to win.
Well, to put a little bow on that, Chase Elliott is racing, so that's a reason to tune in.
Yes.
If the race he may not be that good.
Yeah, that's great. No, it will be it'll be good. Chase is a really good super speedway racer for sure. Yeah, you never know. I'm looking forward to it. It's a great track for me. Again, I wish I could make some of those moves I made in the past, but it's a different type of racing now, so we've got to adapt.
What do you got going on this week? I mean, I know what you got going on this week, but...
I've got Golf Guys Tournament Round 2. We're playing in Carmel down in South Charlotte on Tuesday. Ricky won the championship last year for the Golf Guys, and then he won our very first event at the Peninsula. And he's starting to draw a little bit of questioning of his handicap, because it seems as though the definition of a sandbagger is someone that performs really good during tournaments, but when they're not in tournaments, then it really doesn't matter. Their scores are quite a bit higher. So I'm not trying to accuse him, but perhaps we should do some further investigating on Ricky's handicap, because certainly he's better than me now. There's not even a question. We used to be very close. I was a little bit better golfer than him, but he, since I got a real job now and own a race team, and he's got his farm, he's the better golfer, that's for sure. But his handicap is not going down when he's shooting low 70s, because he's also posting mid 80s when none of us are around. So I don't know.
So for people who have no idea what's going on, I think we talked about the Golf Guys.
Yeah, I run a golf league. It's called the Golf Guys Tour. It originally started from a text. Me and Ricky were getting together during a Loud New Hampshire test, and he's like, you know, we all golf together. Like, how can we create a format to figure out who is the best NASCAR golfer? So it's filled, you know, a bunch of people from Fox, NBC, participate in it, a bunch of drivers. So I created this probably, gosh, it has to be almost 7-8 years ago. Larson's won the championship once or twice. I've won twice. Ricky's won 3 times. And then one other, we had an other win, Brian Williams.
A non-famous won. Person.
Non-famous person. Jared always comes out to the golf course and takes pictures. And he gets a lot of because all the guys are like, why don't you ever take pictures of us? Like, just because we're not famous, like, do we not? And so,
yeah.
You're going to have to take pictures of the others.
The others.
This week. So we got the Golf Guys tournament on Tuesday. Taylor has been practicing her butt off for Dorothy on the Wizard of Oz. So her school play is this week. She's been for months and months doing practices. You know, she had to audition for it. She's, you know, really all in on this whole acting career or whatever she's trying to accomplish. But she's working really hard at it. Proud of her. She takes singing lessons, dancing, acting lessons. It's nonstop with her. Great to see. I can't wait to go to the school and watch it. Really a proud moment to watch Taylor do what she loves and be so good at it. I mean, it's what she's committed to, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing the contrast in Taylor to Molly.
Yeah.
And yeah, like what Taylor's interested in her attitude versus Molly. It's
they're polar opposites, and most parents that you ever talk to will say that whatever one is, the second one's going to be totally opposite, and I agree.
Well, that's what's happening this week. Before we sign off here, got to give a shout out to Dirty Mo and all of our social handles. So you can follow Dirty Mo at Dirty Mo Media across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, anywhere you get your social media. He's at Denny Hamlin, and I'm at Jared D'Allen. Remember to rate, follow, and review.
All right, we'll see y'all next week.
Check out Dirty Mo Media on Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram.